Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, how's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Rohan Nadkarni, joined today by my friend, colleague, New York Times best-selling author of the book Blood in the Garden, Chris Herring. Chris, how's it going, buddy?
What's good, my G? How are you?
Bro, I'm in so deep. Apologies to Daryl Swenson, who stays on our neck, but I gotta divert again real quick.
we made it 7 seconds into the podcast.
Bro, as you know, you have Michigan football. I have the Miami Dolphins, who for most of my life, for most of the last 20 years, have been such a disappointment. I can remember so many embarrassing Dolphins losses that made me so mad. I couldn't talk to people for days. I will sometimes go on the radio, local radio in Miami, and there's a show co-hosted by Channing Crowder, Miami Dolphins legend, and I'll just ask him, like, Channing, what were you guys doing when you gave up that quarterback sneak to the Texans in 2009? Like, that's how upset I am still about this team and what they've done to me over the years. And so this year, they're finally having a decent season, finally put together an exciting team. And I've become so NFL-pilled, so deep in on the Miami Dolphins. Herring, not only did I buy an NFL football jersey this week, the first jersey I've bought in God knows how many years, the Dolphins signed like an offensive tackle, like a free agent tackle, and I was like looking up his PFF grade from the last 2 years. Ooh. Like, can this guy help the team? And I'm just
that's
like,
deep.
Have I become who I despise? Like, what is wrong with me?
That's deep. I will say though, you know, as you're saying that, I would be fronting if I, you know, if I said I don't think about the 2006 late, you know, roughing the passer penalty on Sean Crable against Troy Smith at Ohio State,
when Michigan
went
into
the
Big Ten,
went into the horseshoe, and you know they were both 11-0. It was essentially what we just watched, except the 2006 version. I was a sophomore in college, and you know Michigan basically lost the game on that call. So I, you know, that 2016 that Michigan lost a really close game against Ohio State. I remember those plays, those sequences, those controversial calls. like the back of my hand. And so I get it from that standpoint. I do not look at Pro Football Focus grades when we get recruits in Michigan, or I don't know if there's like a high school or college football focus. I don't do that. It's a little bit, I've never really gotten into the recruiting stuff.
You That's said I'm more sick. You said I'm more sick than you. Yes, what you're saying.
You're on sicko mode from that perspective where I don't get that deep into it. Partly just because it's like the way I see it more or less, well, pro football is different, but like for me at the college level, a recruit is going to take, you know, unless they're that good, they're going to take a year or two to really mm-hmm. make the rotation anyway. So it's like, I can't really focus on, it's too abstract for me, but an offensive lineman that they're presumably going to play, I get it. And the Dolphins are relevant enough this year to actually care. So I get it. I totally understand.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you making this a safe space for me to be vulnerable. For all our listeners out there, listen, if there are basketball losses that stick with you, we'd love to hear them. Maybe we'll do a whole mailbag episode on some of your least favorite losses.
Daryl will kill us.
Yeah, Daryl will kill us. But please, you know, send us your emails, openfloormail@gmail.com. Maybe there's some embarrassing fan things that you guys would also like to get off your chest. Herring, there's a ton of stuff that I want to get to on today's pod. It's an exciting time, I'd say, in the NBA season. Things are slightly starting to round into shape here. Some news that I want to get to this week. I want to talk about what you've written in your wonderful newsletter, The Playmaker. Please subscribe if you haven't subscribed to The Playmaker yet. Let's start with Anthony Davis, who has been on an absolute tear over the last 3 or 4 weeks now. 99 points in his last two games. The Lakers, I believe, are 8-2 in the last 10 games now. They have the same number of losses as the Golden State Warriors, which is kind of interesting. I think they have two less wins, but those teams have the same number of losses, which is pretty shocking when you think about how those teams were being discussed kind of the first week of the season. AD, I think it was you and I who had the conversation before the season. I really can't fully remember, but just kind of a conversation about how will we ever see AD play at that MVP level again? You know, would we ever? This was a guy who we expected great things from based on his last couple years in New Orleans. And we were like, is that guy still there? Lo and behold, he's there. I think he's dominating the paint, become much more active as a screener and roller, taking way fewer outside jump shots. And you're seeing it pay dividends. Absolute matchup nightmare. Herring, what have you made of kind of the AD renaissance? Are you enjoying it? What have you made kind of this whole... It really feels like he's maybe changed the fortunes of this team.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly how it's looked. I think really what I've made of mostly is, you know, some of what was obvious, which I think we alluded to it a little bit when we talked about our top 100. He still is capable of being a top 10 guy if he's mm-hmm. healthy. It's really that he hasn't been healthy, or even when he has been, it hasn't been at the same time as LeBron. That's been a huge chunk of it. Mm-hmm. A huge chunk of it has been our constant harping conversations about his inefficiency from three, which if you stop taking those at the rate that he was before, it's not dragging down his effective field goal stuff. And the other thing that we harped on for years, even before he was, a Laker, was just like, man, you got to take your ass and go in the post, man. You just have mm-hmm. to be a five. And really, this is the first year we essentially haven't heard him complain about it. It's the first year where he's basically done it all the time. I want to say Basketball Reference has him at 100% of his minutes coming from center this year. And, you know, let's be honest, too. Like, Russ has played better. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes when we see Russ at his best, whether it's the Lakers or the Rockets or whatever other team, you know, any other team he's played with, it's generally when he decides he's going to cut threes out of his diet as well. The way this feels is like the Lakers have been dieting and they're cutting out the bad foods, which is, it's a team that can't shoot. And you've got two guys that, you know, in their minds are great shooters from outside, and they're really not. With AD and Russell Westbrook, they've essentially taken healthier shots. Anthony Davis has been able to do it with a little bit more space because he's not playing alongside another big. Or at least, a big that would allow him to be a four. And it's paid massive, massive dividends. The shots are better. They're more efficient. And he's still a beast because he's healthy. And that's really been the linchpin for him for years. It's just, if he's healthy, you want him out there. He makes you better. He makes you a contender. So, you know, it's not overly complicated. I kind of wish it was, but I do think that it speaks volumes about the fact that when he's this healthy and this good, that it does force you to step back a little bit and be like, okay, maybe the Lakers do have something here, which brings us back to the most original point that we've harped on for 2 years now, which is that it still probably makes sense to try to get rid of Russ, even though he's been a little bit better, certainly less harmful. He's had good games. He's saved them at times. But you still probably want to think about that because it makes you think that the ceiling of this team could be even higher.
Yeah, it's really funny. The last time we talked about Anthony Davis at length on this podcast, it was literally Gons and I running through fake Anthony Davis trades because they'd reached such a low point. People were wondering, is this kind of their only way to really blow things up? It is funny. We talk about trades they need to make. I'm definitely on board that they need to trade the draft picks. I do think you can start to make the argument that Russ has found the right role on this team, as in he's bought into that bench role. I think he's been a plus for them overall this season. And, you know, could they move a Pat Bev? I mean, the problem is they don't really have a ton of movable contracts to get back kind of the right players in trades. But, you know, can they cobble some guys together to bring in a rotation piece that makes sense, somehow package the picks? That definitely needs to be on the table. I think there's no question about that they need to be aggressive to upgrade the roster because of how good AD has been. It's funny because I wrote a piece earlier this year that was kind of outlining kind of all the bad moves the front office has made over the last few years that led to this position, which, and the gist of that story was, if you have LeBron and AD, it has to be like, you have to be doing a historically bad job to not have a title contender because of how good those guys are. And that's what the Lakers are doing. And now what we're seeing is, I think, kind of what people expected when they first acquired Russ, which is, LeBron and AD are so good that they'll find a way to make it work. And I think AD especially has been so good that it's impossible for it to not be reaping some success. At the same time, I will say the win over Milwaukee was really nice. Other than that, they beat the Spurs 3 times. They beat the Pistons. They beat the Blazers without Dame. You know, they have I believe they're playing the Cavs on TNT tonight. We're recording this on Tuesday. So that's going to be a great test. You know, LeBron always, I think, plays well going back to Cleveland. That'll be an interesting game. But yeah, I am curious. Is that, do you think it's still, I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, and,
sorry,
and everyone's had this thought, but, you know, what are some of the moves? What's something you'd like to see them do to this roster?
I mean, I think it comes back to, again, and it's funny. I made that vow, in my newsletter in like week 2 of the season. I was like, I will not write about the Lakers again in any facet or form until they do something that is worthy of it, or like make a move, essentially, because we know what the story of this team is. They've played a lot better. Davis has been MVP level. And so, you know, I think they're back in that phase now where like I can write about them again and not go back on my word. They still need more shooting. You know, you get occasional nights from someone where they're better. But, I mean, it's still a team that, let's look at the number for the year, 33% from three. And, you know, that means that they've probably been shooting 40% since the first 2 weeks of the season, you know, to get to 33. But they're essentially still, you know, right there around worst team in the league in that regard. Luckily, defensively, they've guarded the three-point line well enough to where it hasn't killed them. They're not getting outscored by 30 every night from the three-point line, but they still could use more shooting. And, you know, those sorts of guys can be had, particularly if they're one-way players, like a Buddy Hield or something like that. We've obviously heard a lot about him. I thought it was really funny that when I think it was the Pistons played against the Lakers, that Dwayne Casey was like, yeah, we got Boyan and you can't have him.
Yep.
And it was, you know, it was kind of funny just because it's like, you know, these guys do go quickly. But I also think, again, they can be had. You can find guys that are, you know, on teams that necessarily aren't contenders, or even teams that are contenders that just want better two-way play out of guys. And so, you know, I look at a guy like a Doug McDermott. You know, guys like that. Like I want to say the last podcast we had, we were talking about Jakob Poeltl
yeah.
is a guy that could be traded. Like, I just think there are going to be certain teams that, like, these guys aren't fundamentally parts of their core going forward. Pirtle, maybe you could argue, will be for a team like San Antonio. I don't think McDermott really has to be. You know, he's not the youngest.
I like you throwing out his name, though. Have we ever talked about Doug McDermott on this podcast?
I mean, it's just the sort of guy that, like, I don't think any team is going to be so wedded to the guy that you can't get him, you know?
Right.
And maybe it, you know, maybe it doesn't even cost you a first to get him because no team is so wedded mm-hmm. to him. So, you know, that's where I kind of look and kind of make a face at the Lakers, just because it's like, you could have gotten some of these guys without having to fundamentally, you know, shake up your core.
Right.
Even if you want to keep Russ, you know, for the sake of not having to get off of a pick to do that. So anyway, I think there are enough guys in the league where you can go find somebody. Hell, what was the guy's name? Andre, what was his name? The old dude that had the really gray hair.
Andre Ingram. That guy was sick, man.
Hey, man, go get him. Like, get somebody that can shoot. Like, somebody that, like, they are professional marksmen. Just go get him. So, you know, in all seriousness, no, they have played well. I did say I was not going to discuss them until they played better. Lonnie Walker has been great for them and one of the few guys that has shot a good percentage from mm-hmm. three. You know, so they've been entertaining to watch lately. Anthony Davis has been MVP level. Like you said, he and LeBron are playing the way they can play and they're healthy. There's no excuse to not be at least a playoff team, a contender. Mm-hmm. They've looked more like one, but you want to start seeing them do it more consistently against good teams as well.
Yeah.
So Cleveland will be a good test, although Cleveland, you know, has been up and down too, but it'll be a good test for them.
God, this season's just so weird, man. Like, Monday night, we had the Grizzlies without Ja, Bane, and JJJ beating the Heat. We had the Pacers beating the Warriors in Golden State. We had the Sixers with Harden and Embiid back losing to the Rockets. And we have the next two teams I want to talk about. The Atlanta Hawks losing to the Oklahoma City Thunder. Let's start with the Atlanta Hawks, who... Oh, boy. So, Trae Young's just kind of absent from a Hawks win Friday night over the Denver Nuggets, another team that we talked about on the pod since
another
then.
Another weird
two,
win.
Two bad losses. They lose to Atlanta without Trae. Like, Jokic, I think, is a +7 in a 16 or 15-point loss to the Pelicans because the bench is an absolute disaster after I write about the Nuggets and all the things they've done to make Jokic's life easier. They lose their next two games. But let's talk about the Hawks. Trae Young just misses the game against Denver. We find out, reporting from The Athletic, Shams and Sam Amick, that Trae Young gets into an argument with Nate McMillan and decides as a result of that argument to skip the game against Denver. He ends up playing Monday night in the loss to Oklahoma City. I wrote about the Hawks earlier this year, and, you know, when Kevin Huerter was coming back into town, how, you know, it's a team that lacks shooting. I didn't like that move for a number of reasons. It was a luxury tax dump. You know, we've seen it with Cleveland, for example. They go out and get Donovan Mitchell, and the team is really good this year. But, you know, the Hawks go out and get DeJounte Murray, and I don't really know what to make of them, to be honest. Like, they have not inspired a ton of confidence in me. But let's start with this Young situation. I'm just curious, what was your reaction to that report? I dropped it in our group chat, and nobody responded to me, which is fine. I'm not upset. But I'm just curious what your reaction to that report was, because I found it to be pretty shocking.
Man who swears he's not mad continues to say he's not
exactly.
mad.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even remember seeing that text, but as you know, I have our group text muted because y'all be going ham in there sometimes. So I mean, I saw it. I made it's funny. Like, there's so much stuff happening in the league at any given time that, you know, if you ever look at my Twitter feed, it's like, I'm pretty sure last night I tweeted a picture of a black father holding his baby and asking the baby to say dada, and he says dada, and then the dad shakes the baby with glee, and the baby is squealing like a pig. He's so happy. Just a beautiful father-son moment. You can look at my timeline and see that.
I thought you were talking about a meme, bro. I was like, what?
Was not a meme, but it probably could be, should be. But my point is that, like, at any given moment, you can find that. At any given moment, you can see me retweeting something about politics. about, you know, the state of the world, what's happening in Jackson, Mississippi, you know, Deion Sanders stuff, whatever, you know, also Jackson, Mississippi, I guess. But also stuff around the league, because obviously we cover the NBA. And, you know, I made a point of retweeting that exchange with Trae Young and a local reporter in Atlanta, because it was just kind of odd to see. And also interesting from the standpoint of, you have a reporter pretty much asking Trae Young, you're the leader of this team. There's now been something reported saying that, like, you know, you were asked to either come off the bench or not play, and you chose not to play. That's one thing, but you're the leader of the team. How is it that you're not even showing up to the game?
Mm-hmm.
And Trae Young, you know, kind of looks embarrassed at the beginning of the question of, like, yeah, man, you know, it was kind of awkward that it got out there. It was a private matter. I'd like for it to stay private. And the reporter keeps pushing him. And feel however you want to feel. If you look at the comments from that tweet, a lot of people are kind of taking aim at the reporter for continuing to push Trae.
I did think it was, I will say, I understand that press and some people are like, you always got to be combative. And I just think that there are moments where if you want to get a thoughtful answer from someone, it can sometimes help to be a little bit more thoughtful with the question. Maybe that reporter could have taken a better tack, but we all wanted the answers to what he was asking.
Exactly. And it's also a good question. And I think the most middle of the road tweets that you saw after that was like, he pushed a little hard, particularly after Trae said, I want a private matter to stay private, or it's disappointing that a private matter mm-hmm. couldn't stay fully private. After he said that three times, like, okay, you move on, you find a different way to ask it with a different tone, what have you. But it was interesting that, like, for how much credit Trae Young has gotten and all mm-hmm. the ice tray moments and everything else, you know, all the attention he's gotten, the fact that I've written stories about this, that the team has branded themselves around this man, that Trae Young's persona and the way he fits in Atlanta, the city of Atlanta, one of the blackest cities in America, was low-key part of the reason that the Hawks drafted him and wanted him over somebody like Luka Doncic, mm-hmm. his charisma. It doesn't look particularly good when you essentially have an option or given a choice, whatever, whether you want to play or not is fine. To be there, you are looked at as the leader of the team. You are the neon light name
mm-hmm.
on the board there in Atlanta. You are the first star, superstar, let me say that, borderline superstar the team has had since Dominique Wilkins. They have gone longer, like 10 years longer than any other franchise in the NBA without having a guy finish in the top 10 of an MVP race. They have not had anyone since Dominique Wilkins. The next closest team, I think, is the Nets. And they probably would have gotten somebody like Durant. You know, I don't know. But either way, that's an aside. It matters, like, why you can't be there. And you know, I understand why Trae was upset. But it is kind of an interesting moment where this honeymoon has been over for a minute now mm-hmm. with the Hawks. And quite frankly, when you talk about why it's over, Trae Young is shooting 41%, less than 30% from three. He's never been a defender. Every now and then he'll make an effort, but it's not what he's known for. That's probably part of the reason they made this trade to get DeJounte Murray, whether he fits or not, is you need somebody to be able to defend in your backcourt, because you can't ask DeAndre Hunter to guard everybody every game.
Mm-hmm.
So they have leveraged everything for this guy already, and now I've leveraged a little bit more to go get DeJounte Murray. Good move or bad move, whatever you think. So his leadership matters here. The fact that they're going to continue to tweak this roster around him, maybe by the trade deadline,
mm-hmm.
he matters here. It's not good enough to not show leadership in a moment like that. So it's a weird situation. It was a weird situation a year or two ago, right before they made the trip to the conference finals with all the guys that they were going to need to pay. It was a weird situation when you had to sell off Kevin Huerter for really not much. So it'll be fascinating to see what happens. It'll be fascinating to see what happens, quite frankly, with Nate McMillan as well, who obviously kind of gave Trae that decision to make in the first place. And quite frankly, someone that, you know, I think kind of wears thin on fan bases after a couple of years. He had a really splashy first half of a season where he came as an interim guy, got him in the conference finals unexpectedly. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens with this team. And I thought for a while that the Hawks were kind of in one of the most fascinating positions because they really don't style themselves as a big market team, despite the fact that they have kind of a big market reputation because Atlanta's flashy. Everything about the arena and when you go to the games there is flashy. But, you know, it's a team that is still new to kind of being in the spotlight. And maybe Trey is too. He's used to the spotlight, but are you used to everything that comes with that? When you guys start to lose a little bit, does stuff start to crack around you a little bit? And it'll be fascinating to see what happens now.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's one thing. It's not a big deal that he gets into an argument with the coach. That happens, right? I mean, we've literally seen Jimmy Butler and Eric Spoelstra get into almost a physical altercation seemingly on the sideline during a game. To straight up skip a game, when was the last time you heard of a team's leader straight up skipping a game? That, to me, that's pretty unacceptable, and I don't want to be like sports writer guy who's like, oh, come on, man. That's, but like, it's a team sport, man, and you're right. Like, there's something to be said about leadership, and not to be Heat culture guy, but, you know, when I did that Bam Adebayo story, and I asked Bam, you know, what was it like having UD in your ear before game three of the conference finals last year when Bam played what was probably the best game of his career? And he was like, UD has picked me up so many times. It's incredible the impact he can have on winning without stepping on the court. And these things are impossible to quantify. Maybe sometimes we make too big a deal out of them, but they mean something. Like, leadership means something. I think something that kind of just goes underrated when we talk about team sports, when in an era where we can seemingly quantify everything, is how do you get people motivated every single day? How do you get people to buy in? You look at a team like the Suns, the summer they had coming off the game 6-7 loss. Like, if you're Monty Williams, how do you motivate a team like that that's just had two devastating playoff losses in a row? All these things are so much easier said than done. And when you have your star player just skipping a game like that, I don't think it's a thing that's going to derail a season, but it's a bad look. It's like, why would DeAndre Hunter, and I'm just using him as an example, it's just a metaphor here, but like, why would he take Nate McMillan seriously if Trae Young isn't? You know, like, it's just little things that can kind of fester, that can kind of create awkwardness within a team, and you just need better than that from your star player. And you mentioned it. He's not playing well this year either. Like, it's the worst season he's had. He's inefficient. Teams are doing a really good job of kind of forcing him into taking non-rim twos. That's not good, and he hasn't been good on those shots. You mentioned this. I kind of put the Hawks and the Mavs in this similar boat in that I think both of their runs to the conference finals were fool's gold. And that's not to take away from what those players did on the court, but the Hawks especially, it's like, I'm sorry, but they beat a Knicks team that, you know, Julius Randle had 9 months off before the season. Other players had 70 days. Like, I find the 2021 season to be, frankly, more like extreme results than the bubble. They play a Philly team that people talk about, what a meltdown by Philly. It went seven games, and it was close in game seven, and it took like a generational meltdown from a star player for Atlanta to advance in that series. Obviously Young gets hurt, but Giannis is also hurt in kind of the conference finals. They lose anyway, but I just thought that if you really break that down, that didn't really inspire confidence in me in their long-term prospects. They run it back last year. They get kind of embarrassed in the first round. My incredibly nuclear take, you're not ready for this. Are you ready for this?
I can't wait to hear this. Please.
Is there an argument that they should build around DeJounte and trade Trae Young? Ooh. I said it was going to be hot, baby. I said it was going to be hot.
We were talking about memes about 10, 12 minutes ago. I just saw that Elmo meme where he just goes, yep,
that's me.
With the fire, the inferno burning
warm,
behind
it. It's getting cold around the country. Let me warm it up a little bit with my take.
Look, let me say this. I'm going to go back to what I said a minute ago, just from the standpoint of it. Even if that made basketball sense, which it's an interesting take, and I see where you're coming from. DeJounte's more well-rounded, but again, they've built this whole thing around Trey. You don't even bother with Capella, who was a good player. It's not saying that you wouldn't have him on your team, but like when they mortgaged a lot to get Capella, quite frankly. And the reason you did that was because Capella had thrived with somebody like Harden, and Trey was someone that, you know, is going to launch 35 footers, but also is going to take floaters. And like Harden, his floaters look like lobs. And so because they're, it's like the pitcher that you're trying to hit off of, where his curveball and his fastball kind of look the same angular wise, you know, like, so they've built a lot of stuff around Trey, not just from a basketball standpoint, but from a city standpoint. And branding DeJounte Murray, you know, who, you know, you've had players like him before in the NBA, Trey has a chance to be singular. I spent so much time talking to, you know, the Hawks CEO about this idea of, you know, how before they got Trey, the idea of Steph and how he goes into the arenas hours before games to shoot, and teams could damn near have, you know, 3,000-4,000 people just watching that before a game starts, his warmups, and that Trey was really the first guy after Steph, you know, came along from the college ranks to really kind of inspire that same sort of awe and wonderment, particularly for the home crowd in Atlanta. And so they knew all that, you know, they saw 1,200% increases in jersey sales after getting him. Like, I think that matters to them still. I think that they want to be not just a team that can win, but a team that has a marketability to it. Cause they also were the team that had like the longest running playoff streak before they started rebuilding to get somebody like Trey. So I don't, you know, a lot of times we're focused solely on the basketball and nothing else. I don't think that they would do that. I think Trey would have to be like this bad for probably at least another year or two before they would really have that conversation. But, you know, DeJounte's really talented, and like, it's probably a little bit easier to build a team around him than it is to build around, Trey. So yeah, we'll see, but they've already done so much to try to take the difficult task of building it around Trey. So it would be a tear down in a way that at that point you should have just held on to Herder and other guys if you're going to start undoing it around him specifically. So I think that they're more likely to keep it. That is a nuclear take though, and I respect it. I respect where it comes from. Yeah.
Thank you. I can dial up some heat every now and then, you know? Spo used to have a quote during Dwayne Wade's last year that I think he took from a country song. That's like, I'm not as good as I once was, but I'm good once as I ever was. That was me with that take. Every now and then I got. Sorry. What? It's a little bit of a... I'll write it down for you. I'll type it out. It makes more sense. But every now and then, I'm, you know, I can still dial up the heat like a late career Randy Johnson.
Nolan Ryan.
That, I will say, though, like I am... They defend really well when Capella's on the floor. I do wonder Trey long-term... Like, the Bucks famously, like, don't hunt mismatches. The Knicks were a bad offensive team. The Sixers are not going to, like, not post Embiid. But, like, the vast majority of teams, I'm curious to see how Trey, over the course of his career, holds up defensively in the playoffs and what he kind of does to mitigate some of the concerns on that end of the floor if we're talking basketball. Because, yeah, I just – they should be better than what they are considering they went out and got Murray. And, you know, let's talk about the team that beat the Hawks on Monday night, because you wrote about them in the Playmaker this week. That would be the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are not great, but this is another one of those teams that when you watch them on League Pass, for the most part, they're so competitive that I think you kind of assume that they have more wins than they actually have. The Thunder are 11-13, which is not bad. I mean, they're ahead of the Lakers in the standings right now. Half game behind the Wolves. They're 1.5 games out of the last play-in spot behind Golden State. Only one game behind Golden State in the loss column. But just when you think about how good Shea has been, like they're having a decent season. I mean, in many ways, they're kind of every bit as surprising as the Jazz. Those two teams have gotten a lot closer in the standings lately. Tell me what inspired you to write about the Thunder and the Playmaker this week. You know, what have you seen from them that you liked? What caught your eye about OKC?
I think on the most basic level, I'm very pro. Every year, if you go back and look at like my early season archives from here, when I was at the Wall Street Journal, ESPN and 538. I'm always very pro. Let me write about this team now, early in the season, when they're interesting, before they fade, because you always get some early season weirdness. And so it's particularly smaller markets, particularly teams that kind of come out of nowhere. But if you go back, you'd have to go back a while, but Michael and I did a podcast, I think, during the off season, in which I said, Michael Pina, Pina, former friend of the podcast. We ain't friends around here no more. But I remember saying it. I remember he had a reaction where he legitimately said who almost exactly the same way you did, where I was like, you know, Oklahoma City, if they mess around a little bit and they decide they want to accelerate this even a little bit, they could probably be a playoff team next year. And Michael was like, what? And I was like, yeah, I like, you know, maybe it's a little bit ambitious. Maybe that's like my Trae Young, DeJounte Murray take that you just had, or maybe it was. But, you know, the thing is, they're pretty much so intentional about not going for it right now, with how young they are, all the first round picks they have, all the things that can convey if they just keep losing for a little bit, that we kind of forget that if they decided they really wanted to go for it, that they have more assets than anybody else in the history of basketball, pretty much, to go get it. They have now a guy that is playing like MVP level basketball in Shea. And they have a bunch of other guys that are good contributors. Now, you know, would they struggle if they were in a play-in, if they did make the playoffs? Yeah, they'd get swept probably, because they're really, really young. Like, they don't have that sort of experience. But they have great athleticism. They drive to the basket like 10 or 12 times more per game than any other team. They defensive rebound like crap. I mean, they're bad at that. But they do a lot of other little stuff. They basically force more turnovers than anybody else. And, you know, despite the fact that they give up a lot of rim points or points in the paint, they are actually holding teams under their averages when, you know, when they're defending in close range, despite the fact that they really don't have like a traditional big man. You know, they've got guys that are like 6'9" playing center. They've got Poku, who's 7 foot, but he's like 200 pounds. So they're also playing without the guy that they drafted at the top of the draft, who would help with some of that. So,
dude, could you imagine if they had Chet?
Well, when I said that I thought that they could potentially be a playoff team, I thought that he'd be there. You know, it was before the pickup game that he got hurt in. So, you know, it's a little crazy, but that was what prompted me to want to write about it. Is like, if they decided they actually want, like, it would be like if somebody was really frugal and then they decided to like that they're going to cash in on all the savings that they were putting aside. Like, that's kind of what this is. You know, so it's surprising, but they have a very clear style of play. Jalen Williams, by the way, their rookie guard, is so much fun and so good. You factor in that they have him, who he had like 27 and whatever he had the other night against the Spurs in a game where Shea didn't even play, and they came back from 20 down to win. They've had 7 comeback wins of 10 points or more, where they came back from 10 points down to win already of the 11 that they have. And, you know, Poku is actually showing some NBA skill. Like, he actually looks like he might belong, as opposed to just being like an NBA Twitter guy. So I'm really intrigued by them. Again, it won't be this year for them. They've got the 6th toughest schedule left in the league, and the 5 teams ahead of them are all teams that are going to go for it a lot more aggressively than they are. So it won't be this year. Like, I think you can probably pencil in Shea to miss more games. He's played in all but 2, and the last couple of years he's missed like 63 combined. So he's going to miss time. Just if I had to guess, it would be like, saying Embiid will probably miss time or something.
I mean, a couple of those Shea, I do think there's a little bit of a tank job with the way they held him out.
Of course, yeah, but like, I don't doubt that they might do that here too, just because, you know, that's the conversation that gets to be a little bit uncomfortable when you talk about the Utahs and the San Antonios and the Pacers, quite frankly, you mentioned earlier. That these teams are, you know, they're better than we were expecting them to be. They've already gotten more than halfway to their, you know, projected win totals a quarter of the way through the year. So they're either going to keep winning at that rate and miss the playoffs likely, or they're going to realize and say like, well, we're going to miss the playoffs, so it doesn't make sense to miss the playoffs and be one of the best teams to miss the playoffs. We might as well just slow it down. So I wouldn't be shocked if they do that with Shea. Although, again, he's having like an MVP level campaign. He leads the league in clutch points. He leads the league in free throws made. Mm-hmm. it would be a little awkward to just sit him out at this point, but they've got a lot of young talent, a lot of playmakers. They've got a lot of guys that can run the floor. They've got guys that can space the floor as bigs, and that's without Chet Holmgren. That's without whoever they're going to get at the top of this next draft. It's going to be an interesting team, and frankly, for all the teardown that they did, it looks promising so far. You know, I don't like giving Sam Presti credit just for finding one guy, but it seems like they've got several that could be part of the next iteration of whatever they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny because it's like, what are they going to do with all these picks? You know, who can they draft? It's the guy they got in the Paul George trade in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's been the cornerstone of all this. He hit 35 last night, didn't hit a single three. Shai doing this with the spacers, quote-unquote spacers he has, like, mentioned Jalen Williams, Lu Dort, Josh Giddey. I mean, Giddey hit a couple big threes in that Hawks game, but these guys can't shoot. Jeremiah Robinson Earl, who started for them against the Hawks, is like the best shooter they have right now, maybe. Right. And shout out to Robinson Earl. That's no shade. Like, bro, I was watching the game last night. I was like, he's giving the Hawks the business, man.
He's a good player. Yeah. He's legitimately a good player. And he was good last year, too. But, yeah. You know, he's getting more of a chance this year.
Yeah. I really do hope that they make a little bit of a push, because we already know they can't roster all these first round picks. Eventually they're going to have to be moved for someone or something. I don't know if they think it's going to somehow get them to be able to jump up in a draft. I just don't think that it really happens in the NBA like it happens in the NFL, for example. Like, the difference between pick one and even pick three, frankly, is so huge. Yeah. That I don't think they can afford to I don't think they can afford to sit Shai this year. I don't think that they can pull that off. Like, he's playing too well. You can't stunt his development. This is the kind of guy you hope to draft in the lottery. Like, this is the kind of, like, we already saw him, like, play with Chris Paul. He was really good. I'm intrigued by Giddey. I wonder if Giddey can ever become even league average from three. Can he get up to 33-34%? That would go such a long way. I mean, he's a fun player to watch. I love his passing, and, you know, he can do interesting things, but I do wonder if it's a little hard, I think, to have someone at that position be that poor of a shooter.
He also leads them in rebounding at, like, 6-7. You know, it's like, it's a very weird team. Again, it's very easy to see how they don't rebound well. I'll put it this way, because the truth is none of their guards are great shooters, at least not yet, between what Williams has shown so far, Giddey, and then even Shai from three. Shai, you know, I was trying to figure out how close he was to 50-40-90, and it's like, maybe we can get him to like 50-35-90. You know, he's good at everything, but, you know, isn't great from there. So that might be a next step for them too, is like, if they can develop that, because really when you look at all the drives they make, they rely on their spacing to kind of come from their big guys, which is like their team is kind of inverted from that standpoint. So we'll see. But I mean, you would prefer to have a lot of really good high level ball handling and hope that those guys can develop, you know, long range jump shots. By the way, Giddey hit a couple threes last night, including one from the logo. You know, like, he's got the makings of something there.
Right.
It's so early for him and for everybody else. Shai's 24 and is one of the older guys on this team. I mean, the league average for this team, or the average for this team, is 23 years old, and they're the youngest team in the league. So there's so much room to grow, you know, and they've even got room to kind of, you know, margin around the edges to kind of make a mistake or two as far as guys that just don't pan out. But if they hit on one more guy, two more guys in the next year or two, who really hit and really seem to be a fit, like the way these first few have, it won't take much longer. And I kind of feel like the rebuild will be complete from that standpoint. And really, I think if they're doing it right within the next year, they are just pushing for a playoff spot instead of continuing to try to, you know, to just find themselves high in the lottery.
I kind of hope that maybe we get like a surprise week of games from Chet Holmgren at the end of the season. I know it's not going to happen. They're going to be incredibly cautious. Fun. But
that'd be so fun, though.
They were just so quick to rule him out for the season, and I remember talking to Rob Mahoney about it, and he brought up a good point. It's like, it doesn't create any pressure for people to keep asking when's he coming back, but if they could just do a surprise Chet Holmgren drop, that would be a lot of fun. I want to talk about one last team who also won Monday night. I mentioned them earlier, the Indiana Pacers. Go on the road and smack up the Golden State Warriors. Now,
smack up.
Yeah. I don't like to read too much. Like, the regular season's meant to be a slog. Teams are going to lose games they shouldn't lose. It's not a game played on paper. It happens every year. But first and foremost, I got rightfully called out. Gonz and I gave up quarter season awards a week ago. Someone's like, how did you not even mention Ben Mathurin for Rookie of the Year? And I'm like, that was a massive oversight. He's been sick.
Oh, no. But
it's maybe not even the most exciting rookie on the team. Like, now we got the Andrew Nembhard train just coming, pulling into the station. They've been good, man. They're, like, firmly in the top six of the East. Another team that I think people were expecting. I'm going to turn into a tank squad. Obviously, we know so much about Haliburton, but I think Miles Turner's having a pretty good season. They got these intriguing rookies. I am curious that they're not really, like, they don't really play Nembhard, Mathurin, and Haliburton together. I wonder if we'll maybe start to see a little bit more of that, just to see, well, hey, what can we get out of this three-guard look? Yeah, man, what have you made of the Pacers so far? It's a team that we, over the last couple years, even haven't talked too much about on this podcast, but they've been a right up there again, one of those surprising teams to start this NBA season.
Incredibly, incredibly fun. You know, I find myself just watching a lot of their games because, you know, again, I feel like I kind of lean heavily on the teams. You're going to almost be paying more attention toward the end of the season to the teams that are good just because, like, okay, you're looking at stuff for playoff matchups and, you know, different things like that. You're trying to analyze those things. And also, not to mention that because guys or teams are sitting so many guys out toward the end of the season to rest them for the playoffs, to just kind of load manage, the first half of the season always kind of feels more important to me than the second half. You end up seeing everybody make a statistical jump toward the end of the season when guys kind of take their foot off the pedal because they don't want to get hurt. So I paid a lot of attention to these young teams because of that early on. And the Pacers have been maybe the most fun to watch. I put them right up there with the Kings. Unexpected wins. You've got, you know, 3 and 4 game streaks with Haliburton where he doesn't turn the ball over and goes for 30 or 40 assists. And, you know, is just a dynamite shooter on top of it, is, you know, making more of a concerted effort to score and look for his own shot. Mathurin was a guy that he was my rookie of the year before the season just because he was averaging 20 a game in preseason. I don't make a point to watch much in college basketball, but, you know, watched a game or two of Arizona's in the tournament, and I remember there was one where Arizona just looked dead in the water and he just shot them back into it and took the game to overtime just because he kept making shots, and I was like, this guy does not look scared. And he has a few moments every now and then where he looks a little bit gun-shy now with the Pacers, where he maybe passes up a shot. But just, you know, there's no other way to put it. Like, he just kind of looks like a man out there. Like, he looks like someone that's been playing for 5 years, going at guys, you know, just like the confidence with which he generally plays. And I think that kind of combined with the fact that he's playing with somebody like Haliburton that will get him the ball, even though Mathurin comes off the bench, it's just an interesting group. That speaks to why he and Nembhard and Haliburton don't play together all that much. But it is something that's worth exploring for them. You know, like we were saying about a minute ago with kind of the inverted lineups Oklahoma City has, you're able to use some of that with Miles Turner, who's been shooting the ball really well, so it opens up more for the guards. It's just a really, really fun team. And you're not used to Indiana having that. What I would say about them is that what I thought about a day or two ago is, like, this is kind of the team. Remember when Larry Bird made that really, like, jarring comment about Roy Hibbert? And he was like, well, you know, we could bring him back or we couldn't. But, like, one way or the other, we're going to play faster. And I'm not really sure that fits him. And it was just kind of jarring to hear it because, like, we knew that Roy Hibbert was kind of, you know, his production was slowing down. His defense wasn't really as effective anymore because the three-point shot was forcing bigs to come out of the paint and kind of defend. But it was, like, still, like, Roy Hibbert kind of was – what he did kind of exemplified what the Pacers were as far as just, like, this big kind of plotting, like, not that much offense, but they're going to defend the hell out of you sort of team. And Larry Bird is saying to, like, anyone who will listen, he really doesn't fit what I want this team to be. this I kind of feel like was actually what Larry Bird was talking about. It was like a fast, like scoring heavy team that plays with a lot of tempo, that has a lot of shooting. That's actually what he was talking about. Now, granted, it's coming around like 6 years later or whatever, but it's just a fun team that, again, I don't know how much they'll win at the end of the season, by the end of the season, but count me in for watching them whenever they're on. You know, the Lakers win was fantastic. They've had, you know, it was funny when I was looking to see which teams had more come from behind victories, you know, where they were down by 10 or more. I think there were only two that had more than Oklahoma City, and I think the Pacers were the other, were one of the others. And it was just, you know, they're down most of the time, but they don't stop playing. They play really, really hard, and it's been fun to watch them be good this season.
Here's a list of teams Indiana is ahead of in the Eastern Conference standings. The Brooklyn Nets, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Toronto Raptors, the Miami Heat, the Chicago Bulls, and the New York Knicks will throw in for good measure. They have the same record as the Hawks. It's really remarkable. Yeah, I think in terms of those three-guard lineups, I always just want to see what happens when a team plays their best players together. In this case, I think their three guards are kind of their most interesting players, at least. I don't know long-term that it's a solution or anything like that. But, you know, the Monique GIF, I would like to see it.
I didn't know where you're going with that. I'm really sorry.
Yeah, it's all right.
Wow, that is such a great reference, though.
Now you know how I felt when you were talking about like a dad holding his baby and.
Hey man, check the timeline, G.
Bro, you brought up Roy Hibbert real quick. Can we talk about? Remember when Pero Antic? You could see him shooting Roy Hibbert out of the league in real time. Like Roy Hibbert went from the LeBron stopper to like, wait, Pero Antic might just like end this guy's career.
Yeah, I talked to Frank Vogel. So I did a big story on Roy Hibbert, because to me, he's one of, you could actually tell a brief history of the NBA, for a period of time in the NBA, through Roy Hibbert's eyes and how quickly the league changed, where all of a sudden you started seeing Brooke Lopez be, a guy that wouldn't, one of those dogs that had an electric fence, he wouldn't step foot outside of the three-point line. And all of a sudden, it's like he's bombing threes, like he's Steph. And that all happened within what should have been Roy Hibbert's prime, but he was out of the league basically by 29 or 30. He went from being a defensive player of the year candidate and a max player. He was a max player at one point. I remember Portland making the max offer sheet for him and the Pacers, shutting it down and bringing him back. He went, we've had a couple guys like that, like Josh Smith, Greg Monroe, I think was another. But Hibbert had a skill that you would have figured will always matter in the NBA, but he also had deficiencies. And I talked to Frank Vogel about that. I talked to Paul George about that too. For the story, Roy didn't talk to me, but I was kind of amazed at how open Frank was in talking about it. By that point, I think he was the coach of the Magic at the time, but he was I don't think it was anything Roy did wrong necessarily. But there were certain things he just really couldn't do, and the league shifted, and he couldn't adjust to it. And he's like, I still think he's deserving of a job in the league, but his role can't be the same anymore. And that he pointed specifically to that series against the Hawks where, the Pacers the one seed that year, and the Hawks almost knocked them out of the
league. I believe so, yeah.
So, it was a crazy, crazy, crazy time. And, it foreshadowed what was to come for sure.
Dude, he was the LeBron stopper. I mean, LeBron's practicing floaters. The Heat can't figure him out. Yeah, it was. You mentioned Frank Vogel. I interviewed him for a couple times for a couple different Lakers stories I wrote. And I think it was after the Anthony Davis one. I was like, do you mind if I just ask you some questions about the Pacers Heat series? I'd love to talk about it. I was such a big Heat fan. And he was so cool. We were talking about those series. And
He's very cool to talk to.
Yeah, he's great, man. And, He said something funny. So you remember LeBron leaves for Cleveland in 2014. The Pacers are still really good. I believe that was the Pero Antic year, I believe. And I'm talking to Frank Vogel about it. That summer, Paul George breaks his leg.
Ugh.
And, ugh. And I was talking to Frank Vogel about it. He's like, I really think we would have won the finals next year if we bring back Lance Stephenson and Paul George doesn't break his leg because LeBron goes to the Cavs. That Cavs team wasn't quite as good as those Heat teams.
Right.
And, Lance, was coming off, I think that year in Charlotte, he led the league in triple doubles.
That was such a strange year. Yes. And then, like, wasn't he, like, almost out of the league the next year?
It was really weird.
Evan Turner was getting a bunch of triple-doubles really briefly, too, with Boston at one point. Like, it was a weird... And it was also, not to mention, like, when the cap spiked, too.
Yeah.
And so you had, like, really bad contracts on a lot of teams' books. The league didn't know what it was doing for, like, 2 years. And let's be honest, too. The Pacers, you know, I agree with Frank that, like, they had a really good chance. But everybody will tell you, and I think my favorite player to talk to from those Pacers teams was always David West, because he was just going to give you, like, the most honest perspective he had. He was a leader in that locker room. And he was like, no, we messed up that locker room, man. Like, we had a team that could have gone toe-to-toe with the Heat, that did go toe-to-toe with the Heat. And we wanted to, like, load up. And so we went out and we got Evan Turner, and we went out and got Andrew Bynum. And I remember still to this day, like, I'm pretty sure Barkley said, oh, they got Evan Turner.
It's over. Yeah.
Evan Turner, Heat, like, put him over the top.
Very well. Yep.
I was just kind of like, what? You know, like, none of us thought that. But you know, to David West's credit, he was like, you can't do that. Like, Roy was a pretty fragile dude. You know, and I think he meant mentally, and that, you know, not meant in any way to take a shot at his mental health, but just from the standpoint of, like, egos are involved.
Yeah.
That the idea that, like, he, you know, and the way David West put it was the idea, like, you bring a guy with that sort of physical presence, or just, like, presence generally. Bynum takes up a lot of space. He was a pretty loud figure as far as, you remember, the hair and the way he left the Lakers and the fact that he got hurt bowling. There was so much other stuff. If you remember that brief time he had in Philly, where did he even ever play for Philly?
No, he just launched those threes in practice, I guess, and...
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, it was a weird time, but basically, you know, David West basically said, we messed it up before we even really got a chance that year in the playoffs, because we, you know, our eyes were essentially bigger than our stomach, at least the front office was. And we had a roster that was good enough, and it just, guys lost, their attention span kind of was lost because, you know, I don't know. Either way, that team was fascinating. Like, I've thought for a long time that, that history could have looked a lot different, particularly if LeBron had not gotten the two titles in Miami, because, you know, the Pacers had kind of dethroned them or what have you. But it was a really interesting period there. And the Pacers, this is a good place for them. Again, I don't think it'll be this year for them that they make it to the playoffs, but they, you know, they're a team that does not have a history of tanking. And so it's been very interesting to see that, like, even in a year where I kind of thought that's what they were trying to do, they look too good to do that. And maybe it's time to start thinking about them a little bit more seriously in the East than what we had.
Just to put a bow on my Vogel story, he said, I think we would have won the finals that next year if Paul doesn't break his leg and we bring back Lance Stephenson. And I'm like, man, like, you think you would have beaten the Warriors in the 2015 finals? And he's like, that was the first year the Warriors won? I was like, yeah. He's like, never mind. We just would have made the finals.
God bless Frank Vogel.
Frank Vogel, incredible, man. I love that dude.
But that, you know what? Comments like that, though, are exactly why, as we talk about, like, yo, what's wrong with the Lakers? And I remember Lowe saying this on his podcast at one point. He's like, you really think Frank Vogel, who pushed those Pacers teams to seven against the Heat, the LeBron, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade Heat, and then won a title with the Lakers, who were flawed but got, like, all-time performances out of Anthony Davis and had everything come together at the right moment. You really mean to tell me that Frank Vogel, of all people, wasn't smart enough to, you know, to bring Russ off the bench? Or, like, he knew to do that. Instead, he's worried about the egos at play. He's worried about being blamed for taking Russ's confidence away. He's worried about the higher-ups and the powers that be. He knew all that. And what I love about what you just said is just he's so plain spoken. Like, he's blunt. He will tell you the truth. Yep. And that's what stood out to me is, like, he was like, yeah, like, Roy, you have to evolve in this league. It's like evolve or die. And, like, Roy really couldn't evolve. He should still have a spot in the league, but, like, his style of play was not going to thrive anymore. Yeah. And I'm like, wow. He's saying this about a guy that I imagine he's close with that is out of the league. And it was the truth. So I will always respect him for that. Generally speaking, just being able to tell the truth no matter the circumstance.
Absolutely. Shout out to Frank Vogel. Shout out to the 2010s Pacers, a team that literally was raising my blood pressure to an unhealthy degree. Chris, that will do it for today's episode. Thank you again to all of our listeners. Please keep your emails coming. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Our apologies for doing this episode a day later than normal. Some scheduling snafus. Yeah, go Miami Dolphins. We got another big one against the Los Angeles Chargers. To give you another taste of how deep in the rabbit hole I am, I might actually go to an NFL game. That's how bleak it's gotten for me.
You want to know how deep, to bring this full circle, you want
to
know
how deep I am
in the Michigan rabbit hole? So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to go to the semifinal. I've got something really, really, really important planned that I can tell you about offline. But if they win the semifinal, which they're favored to against TCU, I will go to, I already have a hotel room booked to go to the championship game.
You're not going to crash LA. With me? You're not going to crash with me?
Probably not, just because I'm an upstanding person that won't make assumptions that I could have your couch or a bedroom or anything like that. But we can make plans to hang out.
There we go.
Sure, I'll be in a good mood. But I also will have the playmaker do literally the night of the game. So not the best timing.
Bro, I'll help you. I can ghostwrite the playmaker 1 week. Don't worry about it, bro.
Hey, man, this is what friends are for. You're a good friend.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'll be rooting for Michigan so that we can hang out. Man. In LA. Chris, thank you. Shout out to our producer, Shelby Royston. We were hoping to do another Rip City Royston report soon. We'll get that on the books. Until then, everyone, please continue to enjoy the NBA season. Whoa.